Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and this week the topic is GMOs, or genetically modified organisms. My guest is Tom Miltier. He's a clinical nutritionist at he's a whole life nutritionist, the co-author of two books, The Whole Life Cookbook and The New Nourishing Meals. He has a busy private practice in clinical nutrition, and he's a consultant with the Autism Research Institute, very busy man, along with his wife, Allie. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks for having me, Anne. It's always great to be with you.
Yes. Well, and you suggested this topic, which I think is great because I have never discussed this on the air. GMOs are a very controversial and ever-pervasive. Pretty much especially a grain, doesn't have a label that says it's not GMO, it probably has a modified organism in it, or has been modified somehow. So let's talk about what that modification is and how long that's been around.
Sure. So what we're talking about when we're looking at genetically modified organisms is the gene structure itself has been altered. It has been modified. And they normally do this through a gun process or shooting new DNA into a gene of a particular species, or they can do it via a bacterial or viral insertion. So they'll use soil bacterium, for example, and try and migrate a portion of the DNA of a different species into whatever species they're dealing with to give it a particular characteristic. So if you have a tomato, for example, that's growing too far away from its stake, you can actually put the gene in from a different organism to try and pull the actual tomato inwards. Or, gosh, to be honest with you, man, they've done some crazy stuff. They put spider web genes into pigs to give the hide a bulletproof type feel to it. We're taking different genes from different organisms and splicing them all over the place. Now, what we're being told via the media is that the genetic alterations are, number one, completely and totally controlled, and number two, completely and totally safe, and they're not much different than hybridization, which is breeding for selective characteristics. The reality is that couldn't be farther from the truth. Anytime you alter a DNA sequence that has never been seen before in nature, you cannot control how that gene is going to be expressed and read. It's in a very dynamic environment in a living species. So the scary piece is we don't really know the potential impacts, but what we do know is a lot of the safety studies on animals are demonstrating that these are not safe. Now, they originally came around in 1996, and they were approved in the U.S., excuse me.
With very little fanfare at all.
With very little fanfare at all, which was interesting. And when you look at the memos, and due to a later court case, there were 44,000 memos that were looked upon from the Environmental Protection Agency to say that they were safe. And in actuality, the memos demonstrated that the EPA scientists never really agreed that they were safe, and yet they were approved for use in human consumption in the United States.
So what's driving that?
Well, what's driving this profit? The reality is it's difficult for a farmer to weed a lot of crops. It's difficult to keep pests away, whether the pests are plant-based or animal or insect-based. So the herbicide, pesticide process seems to be quite easy in comparison of manually going around and weeding.
But no, so you're not talking about a small farmer. You're talking about a huge agribusiness.
I am talking about a huge agribusiness.
Right.
So those particular farmers then were sold the idea that if you were to have a crop that was resistant to an herbicide, let's take Roundup, for example. So one of the most common GM crops on the planet is the Roundup-ready corn, Roundup-ready soy. So the Roundup-ready crops themselves, they have inserted in them a gene. Monsanto found that there was a pool close to this Roundup that had some bacterium growing in it that were not dying. They said, aha, they're resistant. Let's take the gene from that particular bacterium. Let's insert it into these plants, and let's see if we can get these plants to be able to tolerate our Roundup. And sure enough, they did. And so they now can spray Roundup on a field, and it will kill all the other weeds. Well, it used to kill. Now we have a lot of Roundup-resistant weeds because over time, the species will grow in that area, will gain a resistance to it. But it used to be that they would knock out all the other weeds except for the crops that had Roundup-ready genetics in them. Now, the problem is multiple-fold, though. Number one, the actual genetic process itself seems to lend a weakness to these plants. So they're more susceptible to things like Gossus wilt. They'll have a compromised immune system. They'll be less drought tolerant. And they'll seem to, and there are side-by-side slides online. If you look up Don Huber on Google or YouTube, Don Huber is a plant pathologist from Purdue University. He used to work in the U.S. military, and now he works in U.S. agriculture, and he's a plant pathologist. And he has been looking at how the GM process, and specifically the Roundup-ready crops, are less disease-resistant and less capable of surviving in adverse conditions. So he's well documented that all over via both research and internet videos. So you can find that information if you would like. But unfortunately, the Roundup itself, the Roundup gene, how it works, it inhibits a particular enzyme that allows the plant to produce and absorb nutrients. So unfortunately, the plant becomes less nutrient dense. So we're seeing with Roundup alfalfa, for example, a lowering of zinc and magnesium and sulfur and particular constituents the plant needs to survive. And unfortunately, and B12, for example, will be a cobalamin will be insufficient. And you'll feed these crops to animals. And these animals then, because they are eating crops that are insufficient with nutrients, will become insufficient. And we're seeing infertility rates and malnourishment problems. And we're seeing all sorts of issues that have never really been tested for.
What about in humans?
Well, the interesting piece in humans that we're starting to see is, number one, there are zero human trials. There have never been any human trials. What we're seeing is in certain cell lines of humans, there's a test that was looking at how human cells would respond to a different type of GM crop. So two prime crops are, one is resistant to an herbicide, so Roundup ready, and the other one is produces its own toxin. So one is resistant, one produces. And the producing toxin, primarily the BT toxin corn, BT toxin cotton, it's interesting because they'll genetically modify the plants to produce their own toxin to fight off rootworm, for example, that will come in and chew on the plant. Well, when they chew on the plant, they get this poor hole building chemical. So the chemical that they're consuming from the plant will bore pores. It will make holes in the intestinal tracts of the insects, and the insects will die. Well, what we're seeing is in human cells now that there seems to be a similar effect, that when you give this BT toxin to the human cells and expose them, that they too will have these holes that are bored in them. Now, the argument was from the companies who were producing this particular variety is that it would never survive stomach acid, it would never make it into the human body intact, and therefore you would not have a problem with the BT toxin. But, you know, the fascinating piece is, number one, studies have shown that it does survive and it can interact with cells. And we had a recent study in Quebec, in Canada, which was quite frightening. And it showed that when they tested BT toxin levels in pregnant women and their offspring, over 90% of the pregnant women and 80% of their fetuses were demonstrating BT toxin. So the theory...
That's a huge number.
It is frightening. So the theory that came out of that was twofold. Number one, the corn that they were consuming in Canada was a BT corn, possibly, that they were getting that toxin into the mothers and their infants, and or the possibility that when these moms were consuming the BT toxin foods, that the genes from the BT toxin foods might have been passing to the bacterium in their intestinal tracts. And that the intestinal bacterium then were starting to produce the genes that allowed for the production of this BT toxin. And therefore, their intestinal tracts were becoming pesticide manufacturing power plants, where the organisms were producing the toxin, and so they were having a constant exposure to these toxins because they were confused as to how the level of the toxin was going to be elevated in these women, and they weren't consuming these foods all the time. So that's another theory that's out there, because there, since 2004, we've seen some studies demonstrating that, yes, it is possible to transfer some of these altered genes to microorganisms in the intestinal tract. So that seems to be a frightening possibility of what may or may not be happening here. And that's kind of only the beginning of what we're looking at or what might be possible for humans, but have never once again been properly tested.
Okay, this brings up a question to me of, could this account for the some of the increase in the leaky gut syndrome and all the intestinal problems that we're seeing in the United States?
Well, Jeffrey Smith, who's a world-renowned expert on GMOs, and I did an interview together on gluten sensitivity and GMOs, in which we discussed at length the possible connection between the rise in GMO food consumption and the rise in food sensitivities and the incidence of leaky gut. And that was absolutely one of the possible reasons. We said, look, if you're consuming a food that has this BT toxin in it, it survives your stomach acid, makes it into your system, and may cause irritation to your intestinal tract, just like it does the animals, the insects, mm-hmm. and now the human cells, then yes, that is absolutely a possibility for increasing leaky gut. It also, you know, now, by increasing leaky gut, will leave you susceptible to reacting to lots of other foods, mm-hmm. and then that starts a whole cascade towards constant inflammation, food sensitivities, and then autoimmune disease. Fasano wrote a brilliant article showing that leaky gut equals autoimmune disease. So, yes, that is definite possibility, that if we're consuming these BT toxins and they're causing a leaky gut, they can leave us with some adverse health outcomes.
Okay, let's take a break and let everyone process this information for a moment. You are listening to Your Health. We're talking about GMOs, genetically modified organisms. My guest is Tom Miltier. He is the clinical nutritionist, and we will be right back. Listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Tom Miltier. He's a clinical nutritionist and co-author of two awesome cookbooks with his wife, Allie, and he's also in private practice in nutrition. Okay, Tom, so we have this unsettling possibility that eating genetically modified food is making people sick, possibly widespread. I mean, no one has not heard of gluten intolerance now. The gluten-free sections of grocery stores is expanding like a fire.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reality is, and a lot of people don't know why. They're like, how is it possible that we've had a doubling in the last few decades of the incidence of celiac disease, and now we're seeing this whole anomaly of gluten sensitivity? There was a recent report showing that 30% of people who present to a doctor with irritable bowel may have a gluten or wheat sensitivity. That was unheard of before. Everybody thought it was celiac disease or nothing.
Right.
But now we're seeing more and more people reacting to more and more foods. Could it be that, number one, some of these food triggers, like the most common are wheat and they're also soy and corn, could be associated with the use of either the chemicals used on GM crops or the GM crops themselves? Well, let's get to where you're going to find GM crops, because the reality is it's a very small list currently. It's to grow, but it's very small right now. Your primary exposure in the United States is going to be to soy, it's going to be to corn, it's going to be to sugar from sugar beets, so the white sugar. It's also going to be from cotton or cottonseed oil. Those are the primary places you're going to find it. Now, yeah, there's crooked neck squash and there's some papaya, but the primary thing that you're going to see, and one additional thing primarily coming from Canada, but we see it across the United States, is canola and canola oil.
Okay, so if you're going to a coffee place and you get a soy coffee because you don't do dairy?
Yes.
Does that soy milk, is that genetically modified?
Over 90% of all the soy crops here in the U.S. are genetically modified.
So the answer is yes.
The answer is most likely yes. If it does not say organic and it does not say GMO-free, then the odds are extremely high in favor of that being a GM product. Yes.
Okay, how about tortillas?
Tortillas, if they do not say organic, they do not say GM-free, the corn is incredibly, common.
Okay, and then canola, people buy that for vegetable oil.
Once again, yeah, canola oil. And really, rapeseed is the seed that they make the canola oil from, and the canola oil is actually a Canadian branding/marketing term, meaning like a Canadian-based oil. Canola oil sounds a lot friendlier than rapeseed oil.
I would say.
Yeah. So what they've done is they've actually treated that tremendously with solvents and chemical residues, and it's not really an oil that I will recommend. A lot of people say, oh, it's polyunsaturated, it's got a high cooking temperature, and I say, have you tested it for solvent residues, things like hexane? Have you seen that it actually has any sort of health benefit given to populations over an extended period of time? Because I'm concerned about the GM structure of it as well. So, it's kind of a fascinating piece that we've allowed these into our food supply without the actual safety testing. And now we had a recent study come out last year from a group in France, Cerellini et al., and they showed a fascinating test. You know, most, Anne, of all the safety data given to us to approve these products, these foods, quote-unquote, in the U.S., have been 90-day feeding studies. 90 days.
90 days?
90 days. So the reality is, if you look at recent data, the average United States citizen is consuming 198 pounds of GMO foods a year. Ooh. And we've been doing this consistently. Of course, it's increased over the last decade exponentially. But we've been doing this consistently for about a decade. So now, what's going on? Are we now seeing increased risks of what's happened with rats who've been fed? Are we seeing increased problems with our pituitary, which is our primary hormone signaling centerpiece of our entire body? Are we seeing problems with pituitary function? Are we seeing problems with liver function? Are we seeing problems with kidney function? Are we seeing...
Well, if we just go to the thyroid, the incidence of thyroid cancer seems to be going through the roof.
Yes, yes. And thyroid is directly linked to pituitary function. So absolutely. And then detoxification is linked to the kidney and the liver. But a recent study from Cerellini, when he looked, instead of doing a 90-day study, he went and did a 2-year study. And this 2-year study on rats looked at some interesting things. It looked at GM corn consumption, and it looked at Roundup consumption. Because we're spraying, 512 million more pounds of Roundup all over this globe, or since we've got the Roundup-ready crops. So Roundup is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. You'll see it in your urine if you took a urine sample. It's all over the planet now. So we're saying, okay, is it possible the Roundup might have some sort of effect? And is it possible that you're going to have some sort of effect from the GM corn? So they tested this on rats, and they looked at 2 years. And what they found was, and you've got to see this interview I did with Seralini online. If you plug in Seralini, S-E-R-A-L-I-N-I, S-E-R-A-L-I-N-I, and Tom, plus Tom Malterre, M-A-L-T-E-R-R-E, you'll see our interview on YouTube, or excuse me, Vimeo. And it's fascinating. What he did was he designed his study exactly how Monsanto designed their study to get approval in the U.S. for this GM variety of corn. And he designed it as such, except for one difference. Number one, he added in the Roundup round, so he looked at what Roundup would do by itself. And then he extended, instead of 90 days, to 2 years. And what he found was a tremendous increase of mammary tumors. He found a tremendous deficiency in pituitary function.
So what do we have? One in eight women in America have breast cancer?
It's
or will develop?
Through the roof. Through the roof. And the mortality rates went up. And you should see the pictures of tumor growth. It's grotesque to see what happened to these rats who were consuming for 2 years' time. Now, here's the kicker. He talked to me in my interview and said, you know, this is the first study to ever look at any herbicide, any pesticide, any GM crop for the life of an animal. Now, there was one glyphosate study that looked at, instead of the entire constituent of Roundup, the herbicide, they looked at just one part of Roundup, and they showed, oh, it didn't really hurt that much. But when you add in all the ingredients of Roundup, we're seeing tremendous problems. And what happened when he released this? Of course, he's released other studies in the past. But he released this one study that would be a complete game changer. It would shut down probably GM food production for a while until we could prove them safe. Instead of that happening, of course, India stopped taking GMO corn. And, of course, Russia banned the GMO corn immediately after this study. What does the U.S. do? We deny.
Right. We say it's wrong.
The scientific relevance, we say there's no, it's not relevant. Relevant. Thank you very much. This is what happens when I have too much green smoothie in the morning. I get really excited. So it's not relevant at all for the United States because he's a rogue person and he was trying to profit from this or whatever. And he used the wrong type of rats. And he used the wrong controls. And he, whatever he did. But you know what? He did exactly what Monsanto did. Listen to my interview. He did exactly what Monsanto did to get approved here in the United States. So it's kind of a scary reality that there are issues with the safety, and they are not being addressed. Instead, we're starting to introduce now GM salmon. And we've now introduced in the last year and a half now genetically modified alfalfa. So we're just feeding more and more of these GM crops. We were promised that they would have increased yields. And there's a beautiful paper called Failure to Yield written about how that has never panned out for GM crops. They've never increased yields. And what we're hearing from Don Huber, this plant pathologist from Purdue University, is that, in fact, they're doing the opposite. They're leaving the plants more susceptible to drought and multitudes of diseases. So we're not getting better yields. In fact, we're getting the exact opposite.
Okay, so who benefits from this?
The only people that benefit from this are the manufacturers of the GM crops themselves and the chemicals that are used to spray on this. The chemicals, the Roundup now, we're seeing binds to minerals and leads to mineral insufficiencies in the plants, in the animals, and anybody who consumes those plants or animals. We're seeing that the actual Roundup was patented as an antibiotic. So it wipes out beneficial species in the intestinal tract, which then leads to bacteriologic imbalance in the animals, can lead to bacteriologic imbalance in humans. So that's another issue itself. And now from this Seralini study and others, we're seeing that it's possibly considered a toxin that needs to be processed via the kidney and the liver. and might affect pituitary function. So there's a lot of risk, and very little benefit. I heard that somebody was telling me there was a massive increase in the last 12 months of Monsanto stock, and they've been able to sell a tremendous amount of product globally. So I think the benefit would be to their bottom line. I'm not sure how it would benefit the human species at large. We were promised better nutrition. That has not panned out. In fact, when you look at the nutritional protocols coming from some of these feed crops, we're seeing a tremendous decrease of very essential minerals, amino acids. So we've really got to look at what's happening here. And
versus the selling job that we're getting.
Yes. And you know what? I have three books sitting right here in my office that mention how the industry, how the people who profit will spin the science to make it look as though there's not an issue. We've seen this with smoking. We've seen this with climate. And now we're seeing this with biotech, where they'll actually hire scientists to publish papers proving the opposite.
That are garbage. Garbage science.
It's extremely well documented. I saw this when the climate thing was being debated, you know, almost a decade ago, and now continually. I saw a headhunter article from an organization asking, because I'm part of a bunch of science organizations. They recommended. They said, okay, we'll pay a $10,000 kind of bounty of sorts if someone can publish a paper. These are documented in numerous books. You know, their product is doubt. Is a fascinating book, and it talks about how industry will actually try and get people to question whether or not this exists. So, oh, this Tom guy, he's crazy. So what if he has two nutritional science degrees? So what if he's seen thousands of clinical patients? He doesn't know what he's talking about. Even though he recommends GMO-free diets to people and their intestinal problems go away and their cognitive function improves, he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's all about doubt. It's all about having people question that which seems logical. Hello, you're messing with the genius of nature, the genius of God, the genius of the DNA itself, and you're tweaking it, and you're saying, oh, I'm not going to have any repercussions? How is that even possible? We don't know enough. We're so egotistic to think that we can actually understand the impact of our actions when it comes to modifying genetics. And yet we're not supposed to assume that there could be potential negative side effects.
Okay, so if we decided, I mean, if we actually stood up to Monsanto and said, okay, we're not having these anymore, then what's the next step?
The next step is immediate. We can change the world through our pocketbooks, through our dollars. All you have to do is educate where these GM products are found and completely demand never to purchase them again. You can buy GMO-free products, and you can demand your sellers of foods at your grocery store, at your health food store, online. You can call. You can complain. You can say, I don't want any GM products. I can't believe we have GM products. I'm going to buy, if I have to order them online, all GMO-free food, which you probably don't, because there's a GMO-free project that's going on here in Bellingham where they're labeling GMO-free foods, which is fantastic. And you can go to the Institute for Responsible Technology, and there's a really nice little sheet on shopping GMO-free. And there's also an application that they have that's the GMO-free shopping guide application for your iPhone. So when you're looking for GMO-free products, someone has done the homework for you. If you go to our site, nourishingmeals.com, there's a little link under the banner that says GMO-free. And if you scroll down, you'll see a link to the GMO-free shopping guide.
Great. Well, we are out of time. This has been a lot of fun, very informative. Why don't you give, let's see, you just gave a website. Any other contact information if people want to get in touch with you?
Yep. That is just to go to www.wholelifenutrition.net, and you can search for me here. That's under construction right now, but you can always find us there.
Good.
And it's about to have some wonderful video interviews that I did on some GMO stuff, so stay tuned. In about 2 weeks, it's going to be a completely new site with a lot of resources for you.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. Very, very good to talk to you again.
Oh, Anne, my pleasure. You take care.
Thank you. My guest has been Tom Moultier. He's a clinical nutritionist in Bellingham, Washington, and has this wonderful blog. Next week, Nancy Kerrigan with the Circle of Security. I'm Anne Goldine.